All right, guys, welcome back to the Psychology of Success podcast. I'm super pumped for today. We got Rhett Porter in the house, so I'm super pumped to dive into his story. We met probably, 4 years ago at the $100 Dinner Club.
Yeah, right.
And got,
you wanted to admit.
Yeah, I got talking then. And I get back from my mission, and we reconnect. We went to Benja's, and we were talking, and I was blown away at what Rhett has done since then. So Rhett, for you guys that don't know, a little background on him, he's 25. You went a little bit at Utah Tech, right?
Yeah.
Graduated from Utah Tech. And he's been involved in startups, real estate, and he's built a bunch of different tech little projects, including a flipping homework helper. We're going to get into this, but you guys will want to listen. It's this extension. Is it a Chrome extension that plugs into your Canva and automatically fills in the answers for you when you're taking quizzes, right?
Yeah. So set on top of your web browser, like a Grammarly plugin if you're familiar with that. So it's not part of Canva, this and just sits on top, and boom, you click it and it'll return the answer to you.
Dude, so you guys are going to see today that Rhett's knowledge with technology is just unreal, and he's going to be a fashion billionaire with some big tech startup. Mark my words. So we're going to dive into it while he's 25 years old. I've also been amazed at his ability to control his time and create his dream life. So we're going to dive more into that as well. So super stoked to have you, man. Well, let's just get going from the beginning. You know, where did you go? You went to Utah Tech. How did you get into business?
Dude, I don't know how I totally got into it, but I was kind of around it growing up. So just grew up in a small farm town. So that was kind of the thing we did. There wasn't really much going on. So you always had some sort of hustle going on.
Yeah, just kind of living.
What town was that?
Aurora. Up by Richfield.
Kent. Oh, a little town, dude. Yeah.
So we had about 800 people in our town. Yeah, always kind of hustling there. Parents ran small businesses, so I was kind of around it that way. Growing up when I was really little, I assumed I was super into space, so I was always into like aerospace, and I just grew up and be an engineer. But Black Habits kind of got the real estate bug when I was younger, went to school, Utah Tech, major in finance, kind of got into a little bit more sophisticated real estate world. Kind of from there, went into startups a little bit, more kind of like a Y Combinator, incubator, small, young startup tech companies.
Uh-huh.
And did that right when I graduated for a couple of years, joined another tech startup, and did a bunch of real estate along the way. And then that's pretty much brings me to this last year.
Okay.
So kind of the skeleton, and then there's a bunch of little pockets.
Yeah, that's great. Let's dive into it. So let's start with, even like growing up, you said you did some side hustles because it's all you could do in the little town, dude.
Yeah.
What were you doing?
Oh man, dude, if I could see something and move it, we move some weight. I don't know what.
Whatever. Well, the traditional stuff.
Yeah.
In a small town, like
I don't know, maybe my most unique one. I don't know how old it was. I was probably like fourth or fifth grade, and my grandma ran a little retail shop in town. So I used her wholesale address and became a wholesale.
What? How old were you?
It's all my, like fourth grade, something like that.
They can help.
Wait, say that again. You became a wholesaler?
Yeah, so I could buy their baseball cards, their trading cards wholesale, which were 30-40% of what you would buy retail through using my grandma's wholesaling business address, whatever.
So I put it there below shop there, flip them to all the
play baseball, so all the neighboring teams or whatever I'd bring out, and we flip some baseball cards so I could buy them for, I can't remember what it was. I think my first investment was huge for me. It was like $200 and I got, because you had to buy them by case and there were so many packs, those individual packs in a case. So I got, I can't remember what it was. I want to say like 8 cases in one first order. Then I sold those individually for like $3. And that was my initial, I think I like 3x'd it. I thought I hit a big fourth, fifth grade.
Yeah.
Roll and I, so it's, I mean, that was one thing I did. My parents always encouraged me that way. I had a snow cone machine, so I posted up out front of my grandma's little retail store. It's kind of on the, I mean, there's not really a lot going that town, but there's a lot of people going through I-70 in central Utah. So I posted up outside my grandma's house, ran an extension cord, just foldable table. I was open for business selling snow cones. Snow ice, that was good. I remember first day I thought I hit it big. We had a $300 day. That was maybe fifth, sixth grade. Yeah, fifth, sixth grade, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but little houses like that, timed it. So we go set up when the pool closed because all the kids would come out of the pool. So we'd get all that traffic. started hustling up.
Dude, so you created your own opportunities. That's sick, even being that young. Or just you're resourceful.
In hindsight, I'm sure kind of my mom and dad were kind of like, hey, try this thing. Sure. So it was kind of going, but yeah, I was like doing stuff. So I was always experimenting. What else are we going to do? I mean, we'll not have to drive. We can drive 4 liters, but you can only do that so long in the hills.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess we got to do something with all this traffic coming through town. So that was kind of the...
Make money, dude.
I guess. Yeah. It was more to just try stuff. Kind of like Tom Sawyer, like, let's just say, oh, this thing's working, let's try some more of this.
So, like, being that young, what do you think motivated you as you're doing all that? Because that's rare for people. Yeah, I mean, most people do lemonade stand, but becoming a wholesaler, car dealer in fourth grade, like, what's motivating you?
I don't know. In general, I think I was just kind of curious. So, it's like, what's the next step, or how does this thing work in terms of this thing being... all these cars, like that in particular example, I was paying X amount for a car. I was like, oh, the person's selling it, so they got to have something to send instead of the sell it, I'm assuming. It wasn't as clear in my head, but I was assuming that it was running. Like, oh, well, where are they getting it from? Oh, there's a manufacturer that makes these things. Great. Can I just buy them from them? And then my parents kind of helped me a little bit with, okay, I got filled this paperwork, but yeah, that was the mission. So he was just maybe asking why a couple times, and then
yeah.
I was interested in it, so it makes it super easy if you're interested in something.
Mm-hmm.
So that was probably that example.
Dude, so you're like me. You got the entrepreneur bug pretty early on, and you just kept going with it. You probably didn't really realize it.
Yeah, totally. At the same time, I was spending a bunch of time in my parents' basement just reading random books. So I spent an equal amount of time, if not probably way more, just on my own. Reading stuff.
Yeah. Lurking on the internet. Yeah.
Did a lot of that too.
Yeah. Totally. There is a balance. Like reading, like, what, because I know you're huge on like self development books now and stoicism, but like at that age where you're just kind of reading whatever.
Yeah. I read whatever
I touch. Yeah.
Or see.
I mean, it's constantly learning.
Yeah, I had a race with my teacher in third grade who could read the Harry Potter series fastest. So I blew through those. There was a bunch of baseball series I was into when I was younger.
Yeah.
I got really into space. So any of those sort of like space nonfiction big textbook you get from the library, I just flipped through those.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of all over the place. Yeah, so as you're in school learning and doing all these things, you saw that need, bro, to create that little homework helper because you're sick of having to take all these quizzes and crap. Because I think like this is incredible, dude. Like, and it just came to mind as we're talking about school stuff. Like, where did that idea come from? And explain to us how it works, dude. It's incredible for the listener. Like, listeners, listen up. Like, this is crazy.
So that one was that specific thing was less to do with the idea and more of I just wanted to learn to polish up my coding, software engineering skills. So before that, I was a product manager at a tech startup. So I was working with engineers. My job was to figure out, hey, what's the customer want? What features do they need for this thing? And work with designers and engineers to help build it. Kind of like a GC on a construction site, but for software.
Uh-huh.
So I was always doing kind of soft skill stuff, interviewing customers, whatnot, but I didn't fully appreciate what the engineers were doing. I'm like, oh, that was super interesting. So when I left that role, I wanted to polish up or learn code and then polish it up a little bit. So I was using this as sort of a project to do that. So I learned to retain stuff best if I was putting it on some sort of project. And so this happened to be the one I was interested in. I was still around the university space. I always like to look at behavior. So the obvious thing is if nature's parsimonious, so if she can save some energy doing something, she's going to. Mm-hmm. So what do students do? Oh, we just Google the answer, or we use this other thing called Quizlet. And then I saw a couple other sort of versions of this thing where you could highlight text, right-click, and pings the AI model and tell the student the answer. So I thought, hey, I'll just make one of those, and this will be the project I can apply my engineering skills as I'm trying to figure out JavaScript or whatever the languages I was working on. So I tinkered on that for like a month or so, and then really got it polished up. It was going super slow because it was just a project.
Yeah.
And then I hired an engineer to help me wrap it up. We finished in about 2 weeks. So now what it is Chrome extension. You download it as a student. It'll sit a button right on top of your question if you've ever been in Canvas or one of these other learning systems where they do quizzes or tests or work. And you click that thing, and it'll think for a second or two, and that'll return a suggested answer to you. So super multiple choice, whatever. So that way it works. That was, I was also interested in all the AI noise that's kind of been coming out.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I want a familiar site for them, familiarize myself with what's going on there. So that's kind of the engine behind it, like how to ping their APIs or do some fine tuning on the different LLM models. That was, that's kind of the noise that was going in my head in the background.
Dude, so how, I know the young houses are now going crazy hearing about this, because you're telling us that they can pull up on Canvas and they have your Chrome extension and it'll just highlight the answer pretty much. It'll give you a suggested answer.
Correct. So it'll do multiple choice. It struggles slightly with computational fields like math and physics.
Uh-huh.
It does okay. It scores in probably 70-something percentile. So it does okay, but it's great on anything that's linguistic or text-based. So environmental science, geography, any other discipline does great. Don't populate it. You click the button, ask to work helper, it'll think, say thinking, and then it will take the answer for the text, the question, all the associated answers. If it's multiple choice, we send it to this AI model. We have some fine tuning we did on top of that. That will spit out an answer, and then we'll return and populate that answer to the user on their screen. So boom, pop up like a little bubble. It'll say question 1, 2, or 3 is the answer, and it'll return in the same format. So word for word, same format of what the student sees.
Dude, so how are all my young hustlers going to download this? How can we get it?
How do you go to... You can go to tryhomeworkhelper.com, or it's on the Chrome store, Homework Helper Plus with a plus sign, and then download it. I'll give Caden a code. You can put in the show notes. You'll get a free upgrade. So it's free to download, and then I get charged by usage. I charge for it, but I'll give you a free code so you can go out on it.
Okay. So we will put that in the description for sure, and you guys will have access to it. But yeah, so sick. Yeah, so we'll put that in the description, and you guys will be able to get access to it. So super stoked for that. So dude, that's just one project. I want to go more into like even before that, dude. Like, what stands out about you? This is, I'm giving you the opportunity. I mean, don't feel like you're bragging, but I want to hear your story and dive into it.
It's like, ask yourself the nickname
yourself. I know, for real. Go ahead, bro. Try it.
I don't know. I feel like I'm like pretty average at a lot of stuff. So I went to school, super into math, ended up going to the dark side, majoring in finance. Graduated then 2018. That was when I was really deep in the real estate, kind of got into more commercial real estate as I was doing some of the finance stuff. So worked at a few shops, got a bunch of reps on underwriting, analyzing commercial deals. But it wasn't for me. I was as a sort of an analyst.
Uh-huh.
So that was where I cut my teeth on real estate a lot, as far as getting a lot of reps of from the investment lens of how you might underwrite something with some finance principles. So that was kind of a cool experience.
Mm-hmm.
Got some reps there on self-storage, retail, multifamily, a little bit of industrial, like those contractor garages. Did a few of those. So that's kind of one era of
my life. Uh-huh. Didn't quite fit with you though, and then you pivoted.
I still loved it. I don't know. I got like a, and I always probably, I'll always do real estate, whatever that means to do, but I feel like I have this pent up creative energy in real estate. You can channel it a few different ways, but your solution set's pretty limited as far as like, what's the highest and best use of this piece of land, which you can figure out how to do that. And you can figure out how to change the use of a land to meet that approach. So there's these constraints around it, but we kind of have a finite amount of solution set of what you can do versus when I peek around the corner, you know, swipe new lens on life, and I see the technology world. There's unlimited populace, but like possibility. You can emulate different physics digitally. So there's so much more white space that I think that kind of attracted me a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So as I was wrapping up that commercial real estate stint, I had a buddy call me who was working at a startup incubator / accelerator type thing locally, which are kind of like the most iconic ones, White Combinator. This was just a local one that sat like kind of adjacent to the university and then some community members.
Yeah.
So he called me. He's like, hey, I'm working at this thing. I'm going to go jump. I don't think his buddy bought a business or something. So he's going to go jump on this other company with him. But I'm leaving. Is this something you'd be interested in? So I said, yeah, sure. So I jumped on that. And that was that's kind of like an analyst there. And then I jumped from repping all these commercial real estate deals to underwriting all these startups that were really young. Imagine like a you know, Y Combinator is the best idea, but imagine sort of like, I don't want to say Shark Tank because it's super cliche, but sort of a much more like collaborative version of Shark Tank. So somebody comes in with an idea, Cassie, we had a little bit of the money and a fund we can invest in them, but usually it was cranking out of what's the market look like for this? How can we get some few initial customers? Is there capital needed? Like, what stage are they at? Market, product, the entrepreneur, and then how we could kind of help nudge them along with success. And then if they need money, great. We had that like a side fund, we can invest in it. But so I jumped on there and got a ton of reps too. So that was that was probably my initial stint into the startups where we went through, I don't know, probably like 1,000 ideas in a year or something.
Oh my gosh. So we're just repping. And you got to help with all, like most of them, I'm sure. And you hear the ideas. And
yeah, but they're really early startups. So I wouldn't even call most of them businesses. They're more like ideas at that stage. Probably 80% of them were pre-revenue. But they maybe had, they'd raised some money, or they had a prototype, or they had some pre-orders or something like that. Really early companies across all stages. The thing was just, we worked on early companies, so that's tend to be what was going on in this market. So yeah, I got a crap ton of reps on everything from desalination devices to software ideas to B2B service companies, software. Most of them tended to be sort of, call them Tom Sawyer-esque invention ideas, like physical products. So I got a bunch of reps on different sort of industry, medical devices, equipment attachments, tools.
Yeah, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
As you're in that, so I'm so curious, as you're in that, what ideas did you see that oftentimes succeeded? And what's the difference between an idea that succeeded and that didn't? I guess is what I'm trying to ask. Because you saw plenty of
them. We've got a few reps. I think, I don't know, because that was a unique sample size. So I don't know generally what's going on, but that particular sample size, we had a lot of people that were doing it sort of like a hobby project. So there just weren't putting enough energy into the thing.
Yeah.
And that's assuming the premise that that thing had a market for it. So if that is true, problem one was there was no market for it. Like, didn't quite, customers didn't want this thing, or it wasn't good enough to replace any substitutes they were already having.
Mm-hmm.
So, but if the idea had that, which a lot of them did, problem two was an entrepreneur was kind of more the inventor persona. Like, hey, I came up with this thing. Where are the customers?
Yeah, I know, they're not. Yeah. So that was whole pretty, another thing.
Yeah, that was the next thing where we had sort of like the garage inventor persona who came up with the idea. It was almost more of coming to shuttle this of looking to pass it off to somebody who can try to make something with it. So that was probably the part two of most of all, just because there wasn't somebody pushing it.
And
then you could question the other thing we tried to underwrite or analyze was like, what's the magnitude outcome? Like, so if this could be a business, how big of a business? Because businesses probably have different sorts of magnitude. You could go out and start your local landscape lawn care cutting company. For sure can make some cash. For sure there's a market need for it. But maybe you have limited upside market size. So you have a maybe 9, 10 out of 10 business idea in terms of the market needing it. But maybe that business idea is like a 1 or a 2 in terms of how big it can be. Mm-hmm. So we had a bunch of those come in where we were weighing the sort of weighted average of those.
Dude, what a perfect way to learn business, right?
Yeah, it was
just getting into it. Like, you're learning every aspect of it. Yeah. Venture capitalism.
I love technology at the same time, so I was like kind of a great four lane to that where you just can totally fire hose with ideas, and you had kind of got to cut your teeth. You could apply some different frameworks to it, which we always ran when that local group it partnered with the innovation hub out of Notre Dame. So we ran some of their templates, and you know, we could pull from their invested pool. But as a young person getting a lot of exposure, it was a great setup.
So you were there for a little bit, and then what did you transition after that?
Yeah, I was there for, I don't know, a year and a half. And then that kind of came to closure where we sifted through all these ideas, but then we just kind of came to the net conclusion of the market, our local markets, this is in St. George, Utah, so it's just not quite big enough to support something like this. There's firms of that, that was the wrong product, that sort of incubator accelerator for this type of market. Still pretty nascent early on, just don't have the population kind of ideas coming through to support it. So
mm-hmm.
we switched to sort of, well, we want to create ideas in this market, let's see if we can just incubate some. So while we were doing what we were originally doing, underwriting and helping all these businesses, we started writing a few different ideas in tandem. I was like, let's see if we can get some of these catch on fire. And so one of those was a peer-to-peer coaching company, peer coaching company for college students that we got lined up and we got some contracts through. So as that got lined up, then I jumped on it with my then boss as a first employee. And then we started pumping that. So that's kind of where I transitioned. That was called TrueLoop, peer-to-peer coaching company. And then I did that for until all this spring. So I did that for about probably a year and a half as well.
And so now you're not involved at all with that?
I'm still super good friends with them. Like, well, but not in any formal capacity. Yeah, so meet up with for boss, we're like best friends. So
yeah,
we'll meet up or text, how things going.
Uh-huh.
Have a chat with him. I mean, we meet up for dinner. He's local, so we meet up almost once a week.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on? That it's still super good. I just felt I got to where I wasn't all in on the thing anymore. And then we're kind of at a different stage. We're gone super early. I was more of a generalist. I got into this sort of product role where I was helping kind of build the coaching software to facilitate the coaching. We built the first version of that. It was still really early, so I had some bugs, but that was the first MVP we had going. And then once that was up, I was like, I don't think I'm fully invested anymore. And I had that cognitive dissonance. So I was talking with him like, yeah, if you're not totally in, then you should do something you're totally in on. So I was like, okay, cool. And then kind of wrap that up this spring. So only in a friendship way.
Uh-huh. Dude, so now what's the plan? I remember I got back from my mission and you're at this point.
Yeah.
So I want to hear it. Like what's going on now? What's the plan?
Yeah. So I haven't really committed to going all in on something. I've been doing, again, whatever doing means, some different real estate projects. I had my license. All this meantime, I was I flipped a few homes or bought a few of my own properties. So I'd done that over that few year span. So I focused on that a little bit more.
Which is crazy at 25 already doing that and having a track record. Yeah. So how many doors do you have or have you flipped?
It's just right now that I own just two, but I'm trying not to focus on door count.
Uh-huh.
I found that was a little bit of a vanity metric.
Uh-huh.
Where I was optimizing for good units and good markets.
Yes.
Good exposure.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather spend my time on something that might be a little bit more high leverage, where real estate's a good tool of leverage, but I think it's kind of middle leverage, of median leverage, 5 or 6 out of 10, versus I can do something in another space where it's much higher leverage. So I was interested in doing that, but to answer your question, it's two right now. I've had a bunch more, but we've been involved or as a private money lender or with partners over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Flipped maybe, three or four just single family.
That's good.
Been involved in terms of underwriting and raising money for a few commercial projects, show facility, some self-storage units, but not me personally as the one putting it together, but just kind of help facilitate it from experience earlier on. So I did a few of those, but it's a few a year.
See, I remember we were talking because of the work that you put in and you've just been grinding and being smart with your money. Now you have the ability to, you have freedom with your time. Most of the time, right?
Yeah, well, and you're close. Yeah.
And already at 25, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Getting there. And it's so cool because I don't know if it's still on your Instagram bio. If you go to Rhett's bio, it'll say time billionaire. Is it still there?
Yeah.
Okay, everyone's gonna go slip.
Yeah, recent.
What's your Instagram?
It's Rhett Porter. @RhettPorter.
Okay, @RhettPorter. Go check out, because literally his bio, it just says time billionaire. And I think it's so bad. And we went to lunch and I said, dude, what do you mean time billionaire? And I thought it was so interesting. So let's talk about that and how you've gotten to that point.
Kind of a pithy phrase. But I thought I came up with the idea, but it turns out, like most things, somebody else.
Nah, dude, you came up with it, bro. That's all.
That's all the house.
I was going to say I coined it,
time billionaire, but no, some other guy. Originally, this guy coined the concept of, there's so many seconds in your life. You have a billion seconds. Therefore, if you're live to be this long of this age, you're going to be a time billionaire. In terms of time as the currency, not money. My take on it was it's so much of human consciousness and creativity is misallocated, just goes wasted in people working things they don't care about for, don't do the whole thing, working things they don't care about for cars they don't even drive, to buy a house they don't even spend time living in, for a spouse and kids they never even see. Damn, that's such a waste. So I think my time billionaire take was, time billionaire is somebody who is intentional with their time, lives on purpose, and wakes up excited every day doing something they choose to do because they want to do it, originally wanted to do it. Now they're fulfilling this thing, versus going to work wearing a tie around their neck like a dog running to the kennel, just grinding it out, wasting your life. So time billionaire was the concept came up with, somebody's living intentionally, getting on their own, and kind of trying to fulfill, be creative, make something.
So how do you live, because you mentioned living intentionally, right? Creating your life. How do you do that every day, living intentionally? What does that look like?
Like, I'm probably the biggest hypocrite because I don't even really know. But I feel like the biggest... I notice where nature starts so parsimonious, where she'll take the path of least resistance, save any energy. It's the same thing with us. Like, we forget we're part of nature, whether that's our habits physically, eating, careers. Oftentimes do just what's expedient, what's convenient, versus long-term, what might be most important or highest and best use of our time. And so most of my time is spent, to living intentionally wise, most of my time is spent avoiding what's just convenient and expedient and what is long-term fruitful, long-term creative. So that's the biggest category in addiction is, I'm just going to avoid things that our time sucks. And I are maybe near term might be fun, but long term painful. And I'm gonna do things that are maybe short term painful, but long term fruitful.
So in the moment, how do you have the discipline to do that?
I don't always do. Yeah, but more often than not. Now, discipline sounds like this sort of like frictionless force, but really discipline is just remember what we want most. And so the best way to do that is, well, if I don't do this thing, how bad am I going to feel that I didn't keep the promise to myself? Or if I do the thing, how great am I going to feel that I don't feel bad? Plus, I feel good that I did this hard thing, made this hard choice, which could be something as getting out of the warm covers in the morning, or going on your run you need to go to, but it's raining, or doing your swim you need to do, but you're tired, or having that hard conversation with the customer, or a friend, a relationship, or whatever. But the sooner you do it, the more solutions that you're going to have, and you're going to be thankful you did more.
Mm-hmm. And talking about, that just reminded me, dude, I remember, so Rhett is a member of the Winner's Circle, and he came to our first event, and Trevor Calley came to speak from the Real Business Owners podcast, one of the top podcasts in the nation, and he was talking about, like, wasn't he talking about, like Oakshire Marathons? He's like, who here's done an Oakshire Marathon? Because he was, like, trying to give everyone crap because we're always being lazy. And Rhett was the only one to raise his hand. He was like, yeah, I have. And so, like, he singled you out. He's like, dude, I have respect for you, Rhett.
Yes.
It was funny. But speaking of, so how long was that race?
I don't know which race. I've done a few, but probably thinking the Ironman.
That's what he was asking. Yeah, the Ironman.
Yes. Man, 70 half Ironman, so about 70 miles. That's not just running, that's swim, bike, run, most of it's bike.
And you've done other races?
Yeah, I've done a ton of half marathons. Most of my longer things have just been just because. So I'm not really part of a formal event, just...
Like, what's the farthest?
So 43.
Holy crap.
But that was broken up into... Your blood sugar is going to hit the floor, so you kind of have to support yourself. So I do a mile out from my hand. I do 5 miles out, 5 miles back, grab some snacks, 5 miles out, 5 miles back, a few miles out, 1 mile out, 2 mile out and back. Then I come back, get water and everything in between. So that's probably my longest run. I did a 24-hour run with my buddy. So we did 1 mile. This was a different one. We did 1 mile on the strike of the hour, every hour, for 24 hours. So we ran for 24 hours straight. At when the clock strikes one,
what the heck?
That was
why.
That wasn't just, we thought it would be just for the heck.
It's just for the heck.
So that was probably one of the more interesting things where is it consistent, but it was just so long. That sucks. As soon as you got done, you'd only take you 8 to 12 minutes to run the mile, depending on how fast or slow you're going. And by the time you get back, eat something, get some water in you, you start cramping, stiffening.
Yeah.
You got rigor mortis sitting.
Yeah.
And then clock strikes and
falling asleep.
Dude. That was just like a couple months ago. So we did it in the summer here, which sucked even more. It was that week, it was like 115.
So we were like out there running, getting heat stroke. Come do ice baths in between the cool down.
Just because, dude.
Yeah, just.
See, that's what I want to understand. Like, what is. There's got to be something more. Because, like, what is motivating you to do all these. Because, like, what you're doing, like, it's. Like, it's not normal in a good way. Like, it's a lot of discipline, right? Whether it's, like, all the business stuff you're doing, real estate, you know, just constantly reading, like, trying to become a time billionaire. Like, what's, like, deep down, like, what do you feel like just drives you? Because you wake up and you say that you're excited or you're trying to get to that point. Yeah.
I want to wake up shivering.
Shivering with excitement.
Dude, whatever, every day. I want to more often than not. So far, I've been doing awesome. I'm doing okay. I feel like I feel like I'm not even a very motivated person. So it's kind of hard to answer, but I feel like I'm probably more curious. So I'd love to find out. So the question is, what's on the other side of this thing? No, let's go find out what's on the other side of this thing. Or I love to learn things. And so I learn and retain things a lot. One way is doing that, is reading about it. So I spend a crap ton of time doing that. Second way is experiencing it. So I go try to have these novel experiences, and then I can retain, hopefully learn something, sometimes not, by going and having some sort of experience, whether that's being in pain for 24 hours or doing the Ironman or.
So for you, it's the experiences that ultimately teach you. And in a way, keep you going.
No, you have like, that's like type two. So there's one way you learn, which I learn a lot, great, just on my own studying. Second way is experiences. But experiences kind of tend to be a little bit funner. So it's something, or you get nervous. Like whenever I get nervous about something, I feel like that's something I should probably double click and look at. So anytime I can destabilize my nervous system, I love to experience that.
Ooh. Dude, let's dive into that. So, like, I'm huge on that as well.
Yeah.
So with fear, I was talking about this the other day. Whenever I have that fear, when I have that feeling of being nervous and kind of scared, naturally our minds, they turn on red lights. They say, hey, stop, don't go. Like, this is scary. When in reality, we should actually lean into that fear, because our infinite growth is just outside of our comfort zone, right? So if we can just lean into it for just a little bit, dude, that's where all the growth is. So in my mind, when I feel that fear, it's instead of it being a red light, it turns into a green light, to where I tell myself, okay, my brain's telling me to stop, but I'm actually going to go, because that's actually just a sign of exactly where I need to head and that I'm going in the right direction, because there's something amazing on the other side of that. But
was it always like that for you?
No, dude, no way, no. Because naturally, we're not like that at all. But I've learned through books and through podcasts that, dude, all my growth, like even with the podcast, like I still get nervous for the podcast interviews, but I realize, perfect, that's exactly what I need to be doing. Because if I feel fear, there's so much growth on the other side. Yeah. Isn't the same for you? Have you always been like that, or?
It's like a learned thing. I still experience it all the time. I think my take on it was, like, evolutionarily, we evolved from pessimists or people with anxiety. Otherwise, the person that didn't have that, like that person in our tribe, got ate by the jaguar behind the leaf, the jibal. So we're evolved from pessimists.
Yeah.
So the fear stuff seems totally normal from that lens. But modern life's so safe. I mean, granted, unless one of the homeboys has seen something get shot and dropped in Honduras, like. World. Modern life's so safe, and we're living life far too comfortably.
Yeah.
So we probably are on the side of living way too safe, taking way less risks than we should. We really should be out there having Mother Nature smack us in the face cheeks with her fists.
For real.
So that's kind of the lens where, what's the downside? If you ask yourself, what's the downside with the most things? A lot of the time, it's nothing. It's probably just your feelings, which in that case, it's great to get over anyway. There's kind of, I put in two categories. There's one way and two way doors. So one-way doors are decisions that are permanent one way. You can only go through the door. You can't come back out. Those things you should think about very carefully. That might be whatever. It could be relationships. Could be business. It could be something within your business. If there's only X amount of customers and all great friends, you don't want to just spin something up and burn the bridge with one of them, because then you're not going to have a business. So that's like a one-way door. You want to be very careful with one-way doors. But most things tend to be two-way doors. And we try to make two-way doors one-way doors. Two-way doors, we can go in and out all the time. Or we should go in and out all of them as fast as we could. So we go peek in the door, see what's in this room, see what's in the next room. You can, if things a two-way door, you should experiment, go in and out as quick as you can. But we often conjure up thinking this is a one-way door, thinking there's a Jaguar behind the door. So, but there's nothing there. So you can just go check out all these different things as quick as you can. And then that tends to be, I think, the best way to get over it, get a bunch of experience.
Huh. Yeah, I like that perspective. Just realizing you just got to try new things, man.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Why not?
That's what's life about. So, I love new experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever that could be, physical, mental, business, sports, relationships, traveling, whatever.
Love it.
Then it's either retain something if you're if you can tie it to something, whatever that thing is. So if it's some existing knowledge you have, you learn something new, you're more easily retain it. If you're trying to teach something or you want to go out and experience it, you might retain something much better if you're intending on teaching it, or you're going through some sort of pain. So then you can remember that moment or some great moment of euphoria, so you can tie to that.
Yes.
So more things going on, more mental pathways you can have, neural pathways. So retain stuff better that way too.
100%. Dude, I'm the same way. I got to have, especially with learning, I got to have some kind of experience to think back on. And it just helps me grow so much. So kind of wrapping up here, before we go into the last two questions, how can my listeners serve and support you? What you got going on?
So I'm not totally invested all in right now, but I have a few projects that I'm working on that I've been schmoozing, kind of lurking to see if I want to spin something up. I haven't formally gone any of it, but if you want to keep an eye on what's next, probably just get at me on Substack or Twitter. I'll probably put up whatever I'm doing there. Tash should come in the next probably couple months.
What's your username?
Just Rhett, so Rhett.substack.com.
Okay.
We're at Porter on Insta, Twitter. I threw up a quick website, Rhett@card.co, Rhett.card.co. It's got that kind of homepage link to wherever. So if you want to see what software I've got running up top, you can.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then for the homework helper, dude, let's explode it. So we're going to link it.
Yeah.
And then it's in the App Store?
It's on the Chrome Store.
The Chrome Store?
It's like the App Store, but for Chrome.
Okay.
So if you just Google, or you could try homeworkhelper.com or homework helper and then the sign plus, homework helper plus, all one word, and then Chrome on Google should pop up. Or the pretty one. There's one other one. That's where the pretty one.
Okay. There we go.
Yeah.
Sweet. Yeah, go check out Homework Helper. I'm excited to use it, even though I'm not in school. I mean, if I ever take some classes, I know where to go. So,
yeah.
Okay, so last questions here. So, Rhett, I want you to imagine that you can prescribe anything to the entire world, and they have to do it for 30 days. What do you have them do?
So as I was thinking about it, I felt like I wasn't qualified or didn't have a great answer, where I felt everybody's situation is so unique, some general advice probably isn't going to apply. But gun to my head, what would I say? I think probably one of the more interesting things I've done that was really kind of insightful or interesting was for 30 days, all day, whenever you think something, always stop and ask yourself, am I the thinker of that thought? Is this thought my own? Or am I the author of the thought? Always think and then do that every day reflectively. So rather than reflexive going through life, try to run this like parallel version of you. So you got first person Caden who's living through life. Then you got third person Caden who's watching first person Caden, all his thoughts. And so have third person Caden kind of audit all these thoughts of, am I the thinker of that thought? And where did that thought come from? Is that my own? Or
Where did it come from? If it is my own, where did it come from? I found that to be super interesting in terms of just behaviorally where most of my thoughts had been sort of environmentally introduced to me. Huh. And even the ones that were my own, somebody else probably felt them first.
So in my mind, as I hear that, I feel like that helps you with a lot of self-reflection.
Yeah.
And helps you realize, okay, am I on the right path or am I not? Yeah. Is that kind of what you get out of that?
Yeah, in some sense. I've had a few friends do it and everybody gets a little bit of a different tweak, but it's a great self-awareness exercise. And then you become aware, well, like how precious your environment is because it's so influential on you. And then two, when you kind of identify all those thoughts that are coming through, you can then do the secondary exercise of asking, well, are they serving me? And do I want to be having them? And for what purpose? And then kind of go down that road, which I...
Dude, I want to do that this week. Yeah, that is actually powerful. I've never heard that.
Yeah.
That fires me up because it helps me. Because one, you got to pause and you got to think about, okay, am I doing what I need to be doing right now? And you're intentional, like you're talking about, dude, you're intentional with your life.
Yeah.
You're slowly becoming a time billionaire because you're controlling what you're doing, dude. And you're not only that, but you're aware of what you're doing. Like most of us just go through life, like just going through the motions with a tie around our neck, choking to death, like you're saying.
And you become so acutely aware of how much you say is just sort of autopilot, where like where your words come from, your phrases.
That's so true.
All these things you're probably not the author of. It's something somebody else already wrote and you're parody.
Dude, I mean, that was my experience.
You just caused a paradigm shift in my mind, dude.
And then you can kind of like weigh out what percent is what bucket. For me, it's like huge. A huge portion of my sort of thoughts, which were come from beliefs, which came from wherever, dictating my thoughts. And only a small percent of those are actually my own.
Okay, dude, I'm excited to try it. Okay, 30 days, man. All right, so last question. So I want you to imagine that you're on your deathbed and you've lived the most incredible life. You've achieved all your dreams. You're a time trillionaire, dude, at this point. You're just doing whatever the heck you want, whenever you want. You've written books. You've closed a ton of real estate deals. You got that cash flow coming in, dude. Whatever your dreams are, you've completed them. And you're on your deathbed. And you're surrounded by your family, and you can leave the world with two things, but everything else will be completely forgotten about you, your books you've written, everything, besides two things called the two truths. What would those two truths be for you? Things that you've lived and that you know that are true in this life.
So my first thought is, I feel like I actually know very little, very few things. Most things are just sort of experiences, not really sort of truth, whatnot. So I know very little. I don't even know if I know very little. But one thing that's interesting is two categories. First thing is you're gonna die, fade into history. Nobody's gonna remember you. So any sort of social apprehension or personal apprehension you have to trying things, experimenting things, seeing something new, it's totally cerebral. It's cerebral synthetic. It's just manufactured in your head. Nobody cares. And whether that's somebody else, and you shouldn't care either. So see that two-way door, go ahead, take everything for a test drive, the job, the girl, the experience, the business. There's no reason not to. If you fail, that's great. Like, just get over it. You can move on. Your whole life's in front of you. You can reinvent yourself at any time. There's nothing stopping you, so just go for it. You only have one shot, so this is it. Second day is like, I don't even know if I know this, but I would say you can do more than you think. Where we live, the entire societies in sort of these invisible chains of social norms and orthodoxy, but you don't have to be. You can live high agency. You can do hard things. You can experiment new things. It's all in front of you. You don't have to be credible. You can give it a go. You don't have to live a life
with invisible chains because you look down and you had the keys to begin with.
Probably.
That's deep, dude. You got me fired up. Holy crap. I about interrupted you to say that because I think the biggest lesson I learned today was the whole idea of how short life is and how in the grand scheme of things, like the little things you're stressed about, man, like why stress? Yeah, it doesn't matter. Like it really, like long-term, it doesn't matter. Focus on the people you can serve and the impact you can make and don't stress over the little things, dude. So I appreciate your time. And this is Caden Terry, and this has been the Psychology of Success.